No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it. No, You Tell It is a series that switches up the storytelling. So each performer writes a true life tale and then, switching with a partner, performs the other person's story, giving everyone involved the chance to share their own stories and experience someone else's. Our spring before and after show was our second time performing at the beautiful Leonard Nimoy Talia Theater at Symphony Space, but it was our very first student matinee. Our storytellers and special guest host Najah Almani Muhammad, who are all Know You Tell It alums, illustrated the power of storytelling for a theater full of high school juniors from Global Learning Collaborative and Talent Unlimited High School to help inspire the personal stories they want to tell in their college application essays. Give a listen to part one of our show where Calvin S. Cato and Michelle Carlo become story siblings by stepping into each other's true tales about the best laid plans and unforeseen accidents that send our lives in new directions.
Welcome to Know You Tell It. As you already heard, my name is Najah Almani Muhammad, and you're probably wondering what Know You Tell It is. So I'll give you a little intro. Know You Tell It was founded in 2012 by Miss Kelly Jean, who some of you work with. We all know, some of us know Miss Kelly Jean. Yes! Beautiful. What she does is she grabs four storytellers, four people who write a story, and what's really awesome is they write it based off of a prompt that's given to us, right? So I did it before, these four did it for today. That prompt can be anything like a word, a random word, or a phrase, right? The prompt might be playground, and then you would write a bunch of stories inspired by the word playground. Today's prompt is before and after. Say, ooh. Ah. So we're going to hear four stories inspired by the prompt before and after. But I think what's really special is the people who wrote the story don't tell the story themselves because the show is called... Yes, so other storytellers get to tell the stories. And I think it's really, really fabulous because the storytellers, the writers, they are not in the rehearsals with the people telling their stories, right? The rehearsals are private, yes. So they are hearing their words out loud for the first time, right? They maybe saw a little sneak preview, but they haven't seen it performed. So you're going to get a chance to hear the stories and watch the writers receive the story for the first time. Now, this is the real ooh-ah moment. Ooh. Ah. I'm super stoked for this. So enough about me. This is not about me today. My mom always tells me that, and I'm going to remember. Najah, it's not about you. It is about them. So we are going to bring out our first... I'm not even using these. We're going to bring out our first pair of storytellers, Calvin S. Cato and Michelle Carlo. So Michelle, take the stand, and Calvin, you can come to the hot seat. All right. Yes. Loving those earrings.
Oh, thank you. Please. Loving your necklace.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So before we hear all of the stories, I like to just have a moment to talk to the writers so that you can hear their voice, get their vibe, see their style or their stees, 90s, no? Get their style, their vibe, and then you get to hear their words performed and presented by somebody else. So this is Calvin. Everyone give it up for Calvin. They love you already, Calvin.
Stop.
That's amazing.
Please.
Period.
It's my first time. Oh, my God. Shut up.
So Calvin is awesome. Calvin was named one of Time Out New York's LGBTQ comics of color to watch out for. So watch out for Calvin, okay? And now, I think that that's absolutely amazing. I wanted to make sure I shouted that out. I know that you've been working on a pilot called Emergency Black Meeting.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yes. So I'd love if you could tell us about the process, what it's like writing a TV show, and also like maybe a little inside scoop on this pilot, whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah, so this is a pilot that I had written, this was a while ago, it was for Vice Media, which now is like not the same as it used to be. But essentially what it was about challenging black stereotypes. And so it was me and a friend of mine, she's black and British, and we were having a conversation about camping, because she was like, black people don't camp. And I was like, I feel like black people, we could camp. Like,
we could
do it. Listen, I mean, you know, I get it. Outdoors, the bugs, ugh, yuck. But like, I'm like, we can do that. And so we wrote this pilot, and then we met with like someone who, we got connected with someone who was like a black camper. And so like, that was his official thing, is he was like a counselor and like would like lead these all black groups like camping in like, you know, Pennsylvania or, you know, the Adirondacks, et cetera, et cetera.
Amazing. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. Now, this is the fun part. So, this hashtag flawless cup holds a bunch of prompts that are actual prompts that some of you might end up seeing when you apply for colleges next year. I won't talk too much about it, but I'm going to pick a prompt out. You don't know what it is.
Okay.
And you're going to answer it. Bring it back to your college days, okay?
Oh, boy.
Your prompt is, your question. Oh, it's long. This is from the University of Chicago. Shout out, Chi-Town. Daddy-o, far out, gnarly. The list of slang terms goes on and on. Sadly, most of these aren't so fly anymore. As if, name an outdated slang from any decade or language that you'd bring back and explain why you totally dig it.
Ooh.
That's, wow. That's good. Good job, Chicago.
I know, seriously. You know, I guess I would bring back, like, fresh. Like, fresh used to be, like, really cool. So you'd be like, oh, damn, that haircut's mad fresh. I don't know, I feel like fresh, it's clean. It seems clean, you know? I don't know. I don't like...
So fresh and so clean, clean.
Exactly. Ain't nobody dope as me.
You don't know that, Outkast? Ain't nobody.
There, okay.
Thank you. And it's always the same one. That's my boy right there.
I see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Amazing. Okay, so now I'd like to ask you, our live studio audience, if you were on the school board for the University of Chicago, would Calvin get in based on his answer? No? Yes?
I thought you said
right,
you
why
loved
yes?
me. What happened?
Yes, there was a lot of details. Why no?
Fine, that's fair.
Okay, so we're feeling like
I had 30 seconds.
We're feeling like if you were to like flush this out, we want a few more details, maybe quote Outkast.
Okay.
And specifically Andre 3000's full name.
Okay, you know, fair enough. I'll accept that.
Let's give it up for Calvin. I think he did a great job. And now we are going to hear our first story, which is Don't Quit Your Day Job, written by Calvin S. Cato, performed by Michelle Carlo.
Don't quit your day job. What kind of job are you looking for? Asked the employment recruiter in a clipped tone. Karen wore a black pantsuit, had a short pageboy haircut, and was ruthlessly skinny. Well, my experience is in editing and writing, I said, so I'm hoping to get a job in publishing. How did I end up at Sunshine Solutions? I graduated from college in the summer of 2006 and moved to New York City with dreams of becoming a stand-up comedian and a published author. Unfortunately, the closest I came to either dream was a two-week freelance stint working at a magazine. After several weeks of failed job interviews and unanswered cover letters, I signed up with a temp agency. That turned out to be a huge mistake. She tapped her fingers against the keyboard. Well, we only have jobs in administrative assisting. What is your expected salary? At my last job, I made $15 an hour. Well, I see jobs here for $11 an hour. Now, here's the thing. I may have graduated with a degree in English, but I did understand maths, so I knew that 11 is less than 15. $15 an hour translated to a bottle of wine an hour. At best, $11 was a terrible six-pack of beer an hour. What was I going to do with that? Well, I'm not sure if that can work for me, I said. Karen's face contorted into a grimace. You just graduated from college. It's not realistic to expect $15 an hour. I was taken aback, but too scared to argue. After all, I needed a job. So I acquiesced and said I could accept a pay cut. I spent the next several weeks in a white-walled, windowless mailroom, stuffing envelopes, alphabetizing them by the employee's last name, and placing them in boxes. Stuff, sort, box. Stuff, sort, box. Stuff, sort, box. Ow, for 7 hours! The office manager would say condescending things like, oh, wow, you are so organized. And, boy, you can really stack those envelopes. And every Friday, I'd get a check-in call from Karen. You're doing so well. It'll really help your resume. And I just roll my eyes and say, I can't thank you enough, but I knew that I was not destined for this life. Most of my fellow graduates weren't doing any better in the so-called real world either. My friend Ben was an aspiring filmmaker working as a receptionist in a credit union. My other friend Daniel was an aspiring stand-up comedian and a television writer. He was arguably the closest of us to achieving his dreams, but I didn't envy him his job. He was one of the few white guys who worked on a majority black competition show on MTV called Yo Mama. His job was to yell, "Oh!" at the end of every competition segment. We were hanging out at Daniel's apartment one night when he told us about an online post about a game show on the Game Show Network. It was looking to cast teams of three for their program. It didn't take much cajoling for Ben and I to get on board. What do we need to bring for this audition? I asked. Just our personalities and an interesting backstory, said Daniel. What kind of interesting story? Said Ben. I'm sure I can think of something. A week later, I was in a windowless office, another windowless office, with my friends, meeting with the casting director, an older woman with oversized glasses, a stained blouse, and a messy bun. Not what I expected a casting director to look like. She played a test round with us and then asked us how we met. Daniel told her, we all went to college together and we were aspiring artists. I could see the casting director's eyes start to glaze over. So I blurted out, we met at a naked party! Well, it wasn't entirely untrue. We did all attend a naked party, but we certainly didn't meet there. However, a little stretch of truth never hurt anybody, right? Her eyes sharpened. You three did what? She flashed a huge smile, and I knew we got on the show. In the weeks leading up to the show taping, I'd spend my days doing the stuff, sort, box grind, and my nights at Daniel's apartment with Ben, taping and studying as many old episodes of Chain Reaction as we could find. The more I focused on the game show, the less I focused on my day job. I slacked off, took longer lunches, and snuck out early. Why not? I was going to be a star after all, a multi-millionaire! The day before the taping, I entered the office and proceeded to not work. And I mean really not work. I sat at my desk and I browsed the internet for several hours before the office manager asked, are you planning to get some of that stuff done today? Oh, no. In fact, this is my last day. Why is that? I'm going to be in a game show, so I don't have any plans to come back here ever again. I see. I'm going to have to call Karen. Less than 5 minutes later, my cell phone rang. Hi, Karen, I said as sweetly as possible. Calvin, I hear you aren't planning to work today. But that must be a mistake, right? That's absolutely correct. Well then, please fill out your timesheet and leave the office immediately. And I was more than happy to comply. I greeted Daniel and Ben at the studio space on taping day, wearing my nicest suit jacket and polo shirt from Abercrombie. I kept the tags on my outfit in case we didn't win so I could return them. After a quick meeting with the makeup artist, we made it to the stage. It was huge. Overhead was a dazzling array of blue, yellow, and white lights. And there was a full studio audience seated in a tiered auditorium that surrounded a circular stage. Wow, I thought. These people are all here to see us. I turned to Daniel and Ben, and they were both beaming from ear to ear. We shook hands with the show's host, Dylan Lane. He had that generically attractive white guy look, 500-watt smile, full head of hair, wearing a suit with no tie with the top button loose as if to convey business, but chill about it. The theme was guys against girls. Don't judge me for the naming convention. It was a different and less gender-progressive time. Then we met our competition, three lovely ladies from Philadelphia dressed in color-coordinated pink outfits. Dylan walked us through the rules. The goal was to solve a word chain puzzle. The contestants received the first word and then the first letter of the next word. So, if the puzzle was chain, R, you would guess reaction. And then if the next letter was T, it could be reaction time. And so on and so forth until the chain was complete. So, Dylan asked, are you all ready to play chain reaction? We can't wait! The lights were lowered, the cell phones were turned off, placing the audience in the dark, and all the contestants were spotlit. The first round was underway. The first word was spare, and the next word started with a T. Is it tire? Ben asked. That is correct, for $100, said Dylan. Woo! We were now underway, and it was my turn next. The next word after tire was T. Is it tread? I said, yes, for another $100. I couldn't believe it. We won the entire first round and made it to the bonus round. For the bonus round, we had to connect the word cats to the word barren in three words. I immediately saw the answer and said, cat's cradle, cradle robber, robber baron. That is correct for an extra $500. We had reached the midpoint, and I mentioned we met at college at a naked party, which got the audience laughing. Dylan said, oh, wow, a naked party. That sounds adventurous. We'll invite you to the next one, Daniel said, which elicited even more laughs from the crowd. We swept the second and third round, and it was a full shutout for the ladies. They got eliminated. We then advanced to the final round, where we could win an extra $5,000. For that round, I was seated in a chair facing away from a large monitor while Daniel and Ben had to feed me clues to guess what word was on the screen. To everyone's amazement, I got all seven words correct. And we were the big winners! We won $8,700, which to me would be an infinite supply of champagne. Dylan shook our hands and congratulated us on the big victory. We heard the producer then yell, cut! And we were all brought to the side of the stage. The producer handed each of us contracts to sign, and Daniel, Ben, and I were so giddy, our hands were shaking. So, do we receive our checks now? I asked. The producer chuckled. Oh, no. You don't receive the check until about 6 months after the show airs. My heart started racing. When is the show airing? Well, it could be in a week or it could be in a year. A year? Is there any way to speed up the process? I'm afraid not. But congratulations. Hey, you're going to be on TV. What? Not only was I not a multimillionaire, I was now making $0 an hour, which is way less than 15 or 11. And the next day, I called up Karen and asked her if it was possible for me to get my old job back. Don't call us. We'll call you. And she curtly hung up the phone. So I called a different agency, which got me an assistant's job at another magazine. I not only worked diligently, I gratefully used the money, my cut, $2,900, to refocus on my creative pursuits. I signed up for open mics and took a creative writing workshop to hone my skills so that I could be published someday. About 3 months later, I got an email letting me know my show's air date was the next day. That evening, I went to a bar, ordered a 1 work hour's worth $15 glass of wine, and asked the bartender to change one of the televisions to the game show network. The bartender saw me appear on the screen and said, oh, wow, that's you! I was transfixed. Watching my team succeed and seeing all the cute witticisms we'd done made it into the programs. You're a winner, the bartender said. What are you going to do with all that money? I'm going to save it and not quit my day job. Thank you.
All right. So you just heard your story for the first time. Do you want to greet your storyteller? Amazing. Give it up for Calvin's story one more time, performed by Michelle. Back to the hot seat. We've got Michelle.
And this seat is hot because Calvin was sitting in it.
Ooh. Stop. Ooh. Oh, hush. All right, Michelle, you're fabulous. I was reading your bio. I know that you are a writer, storyteller, and sometimes actor.
That's correct.
Yes, I love that. I love the way you phrase that as well. I'm wondering, how do your different artistries inform one another?
The same skills are transferable for all of them. I mean, the number one thing is that you need to be present. You need to show up. Mm. And also, you need to be receptive to what's going on. So when I was taking improv classes back in the day, I mean, always remember, just say yes. Because if you say no, the scene stops right there. So you just say yes, and then you see where it takes you when you keep going.
I have so many things I wanted to say, but then I'm like, they're in high school. Mm. So we're just going to keep it pushing.
Yeah. You'll find out someday.
Someday. Beautiful. Just say yes. I love that. And that has helped you out in all of your...
Just showing up. You have to do the work. There you go.
Yeah, you don't slack off and you do the work.
Right. You get up, you take your shower, you know, you make your coffee or whatever you need to have, and you get out the door and you get there 5 minutes early because on time is early and... No, wait. On time is late. Early is on time and on time is late.
And late is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful. Well, thank you.
Unless you're on the F train, which, you know...
Yeah, I know. We all know the F train.
The F and F train. It lives up to the letter of its name.
We are going to get our college supplemental essay question. Can I get a drum roll, please, while I pick it? All right.
Uh-oh.
Michelle. Ooh. Do we all know a little college called Harvard?
Oh.
Harvard would like to know, what are the top three things your roommates might like to know about you?
Well, I wrote actual graffiti when I was in middle school, like on actual trains. I am proud of it because there weren't that many girls that did it. I didn't get famous, but I did it. I hosted burlesque shows. Look, you can Google it, what burlesque is. It's not stripping, for 14 years. Also, I can do the Spock handshake. Live long and prosper.
Beautiful. Graffiti. Graffiti, Spock, and burlesque. All right, what do we think? Make some noise if we think Michelle's going to get into Harvard based on that. I think they like it. The Harvard people would love to see the burlesque show. Mm. I think that's what they want. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. Up next, we have our second story, The Accident by Michelle Carlo, performed by Calvin S. Cato. Make some noise.
The Accident. After years of trying and failing at multiple professions and hating every job I ever had, I decided to become an actor at the age of 35, the age most sane people give it up. I took acting classes, improv classes, comedy classes every night after work, and one day my acting teacher sent me to meet a casting director who sent me on an audition the very next day. My first audition! It was me and a dozen models, actual, real models. But somehow, I got the part, and that film became Living in Oblivion, the quintessential 1990s indie movie about making indie movies. I'm the nurse from the lead actor Steve Buscemi's Nightmares, who helps a psychiatric doctor take him away at the end. Okay, it wasn't a speaking part, but it led to more film and TV bookings. Sometimes, I even had a line or two, which mostly ended up being cut. But casting directors were now calling me in on the regular. I even started doing commercial print modeling and had a TV commercial agent who was sure I'd be able to join SAG, the Actors Union, before too long. And then it was Saturday, July 19th, 1997, and I was lying on a gurney in the emergency room of Brooklyn Hospital. It was my father's 65th birthday, and I had been on the way to his funeral. 1 minute, I was riding in a cab, going over the eulogy I'd written. The next, another cab, making an illegal left turn after running a red light, broadsided my cab, and I was thrown into the metal partition separating me from the driver. Where were the seatbelts? It was the 90s, The cab was from the 80s. There weren't any. Time stopped. My side of the taxi door opened, and two women lifted me out. They asked, "Are you okay?" but flinched when they saw my face. I tried to say, "I think so," but couldn't put my lips together. Blood sprayed from my mouth. From the way the women looked at each other, I sensed they were a couple and remember thinking, "Wow, I've been saved by lesbians. That is so Park Slope." Then a cop came over, who also flinched when he saw me, and took my arm. "Don't worry, miss. It's going to be okay," he said with the fake assurance medics in war movies give to the about to die horribly. He helped me into a waiting ambulance where, after three tries, I finally got the courage to look at my reflection in the chrome paper towel dispenser. The left side of my face was split open, butterflied from my upper lip to just under my nostril. My gums were shredded, and I could see the roots of my teeth. And when I reached my hand up to where my lip had been, my finger went inside my face. My father was dead, and my face was ruined. It was not going to be okay. A doctor came in and held my lip together so I could kind of talk, and I told him I needed to be fixed, and quick. I was already late to my father's funeral, I needed to give the eulogy, and also, I was an actor, so I needed to look normal after. "I'm a plastic surgeon," he said. "I can sit you up with local anesthesia, but it's going to hurt a lot." It did hurt. The worst physical pain I'd ever had. But finally, I tottered down a hill at Trinity Cemetery in Washington Heights with a web of 60 stitches in my mouth and face. I could barely open my mouth wide enough to speak, but I was determined to give my father his honor. After that, nothing else mattered. And when I was finally brought home, I collapsed on my living room couch where I would spend the next 5 weeks. It took just 2 days of daytime TV. Ricky Lake? No. Jenny Jones? Double no. Jerry Springer? Hell no. Until I finally broke down and obeyed the 1-800 cable commercial that seemed to run every 5 minutes. My block had gotten wired that spring, and I needed videos. Smashing Pumpkins, Lenny Kravitz, Run DMC. But when I called to say, "I want my MTV," they said they couldn't come till the next week. A week? I got so frustrated, I popped 10 stitches. And when my face finally healed, I walked into my agent's office with a fresh pink scar over my lip, a mouth full of braces, and a slightly crooked smile. She said she was sorry for my loss, needed to take a call, and I never saw her again. So, not only had I lost my father, but my purpose in life. After so many years of trying and failing at nearly everything, acting was the only thing that seemed to come naturally to me. If I couldn't be an actor, I didn't know what I was going to do. There was only one creative outlet left to me, one I had been resisting for a year, because it wasn't really acting. It was different. The year before, I'd run into a woman from my improv class who invited me to join her at an open mic at a performance space on the Lower East Side called Surf Reality. I was like, no thanks. See, I had done a comedy mic once, begged five friends to pay $10 plus a two-drink minimum, only to see me heckled off the stage. It was so humiliating that I said, never again. But my friend said, "No, it's not like that. It's different." So I went that Sunday and saw stand-up. Some was okay, but mostly terrible. Poetry, let's just say it was no Def Jam. And then there was nudity. Not the fun kind, but like when you get an unwanted text from someone you have absolutely no interest in. Oh yeah, this is different, all right. I'm done. But as I was leaving, another woman came on stage and the power of her voice made me take one last look. In 8 minutes, she performed four of the most original comedy characters I'd ever seen in my life. Way better than I'd seen in any acting class. It was unexpected, hilarious, and inspiring. I went back to that open mic every Sunday. When I finally got the courage to put my name in the bucket, I did my acting class audition monologue and wore Betsy Johnson leopard print baby doll dress. The dress got attention. The monologue didn't. People left the room. After that, I told myself this place was not about real acting. These weirdos would never be at any real audition I used to go to. Some people looked like they needed to do more laundry. Others like they needed less beer. But now my life had changed, and I knew that the open mic was a place where I could at least try to be creative, and where it didn't matter if I had braces or a visible scar. I bet I wasn't the only person who'd been scarred. My first time back at the open mic after the accident was on a chilly night in September. I just had my braces tightened, and my mouth was really sore. I'd planned to do another acting monologue, this one about death, and make a parallel to my father's death and the death of my acting career. But when my name was called, I went on stage and froze, just completely left my body. I wanted to run, to bail, to leave and never come back. But I knew that if I left that room, it would be my final defeat. If I couldn't do this, I might as well just throw myself in front of the F train. Then the host came down with his stool, and I saw there was real compassion in his eyes. "It's okay," he said. "You can do this." He just thought I had normal stage fright. He had no idea what I had been through. I took a breath, sat down, and what came out of my mouth was not the monologue, but a story about my father's death, the car accident, and the 1-800 cable phone call.
"Hello? 1-800 cable? I'm on SCE. I said I want an SCE. No taxi getting there. My mouth is showing up. Can you come tomorrow? Next Tuesday? No, no. Ow, ow, ow."
I popped 10 stitches, but I got my MTV. And my father would probably rise from his grave if he knew I was paying $29.95 a month to watch not just TV, but teenage TV when I was a grown-ass woman of 36. But papi, lo siento, sorry. I'm keeping it. No one left the room. I didn't know if it was good or not. I didn't know if it was art or not. I just knew I had to do it. Afterwards, people came up to me and said things like how they had been in a car accident or that one of their parents had died. And, hey, that 1-800 cable bit is mad dope. Want to be on my show next week? I had once thought of Surf Reality and the Lower East Side alternative comedy theater scene as a place only for freaks, until I proudly became one of them. The freedom to experiment, the desire to collaborate and support, it was unlike anything I had ever experienced. I got to meet some of the most brilliantly deranged creative people I'd ever known, many of whom I still collaborate with today. The braces finally came off, and thanks to 2 years of microderm treatments and peels, all that's left of my scar is a faint white line you can only see if you wake up next to me. I'm now a writer, a storyteller, and yes, I'm still an actor. Sometimes I wonder what my life would have been like if my father had lived, or the accident had never happened. Or maybe there are no accidents.
Can we give a bigger round of applause for Michelle's story?
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.